Anderson with the BBC News. Brazilian police have formally accused the COVID-sceptic former president Jair Bolsonaro of falsifying his vaccination records, opening the door to possible criminal charges in the Supreme Court. Mr. Bolsonaro's health records say he received a jab in São Paulo in July 2021, but an investigation later found he wasn't in the city at the time. Our correspondent, Ione Wells, is there.
What's slightly odd about this whole thing is he has repeatedly denied any knowledge of his records being tampered with. He has always claimed very publicly that he's never had the vaccine. When asked again for a comment today in response to his indictment, he said he was calm and that the world knows that he hasn't had a COVID vaccine. And yet the public health records that were made public of his did suggest that he had a vaccine. And there is an implication that, there was an allegation that was tampered with in order to, for example, let him travel abroad.
The UN's human rights chief, Volker Türk, has condemned a sweeping new security law in Hong Kong, saying it could lead to the criminalisation of rights and freedoms protected under international law. Mr. Türk said the security bill's content was deeply troubling. Jeremy Lawrence is his spokesperson.
The UN human rights chief deplores the accelerated consideration and adoption of a national security bill in the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region of China, in spite of serious concerns raised by the UN Human Rights Office about the incompatibility of many of the provisions with international human rights law. The High Commissioner says the ambiguity is deeply troubling, given its potential misuse to target dissenting voices, journalists, researchers, civil society actors, and human rights defenders.
Donald Trump's former trade advisor, Peter Navarro, has reported to a US federal prison in Miami to begin a four-month prison sentence for contempt of Congress. He's the first senior member of the Trump administration to be imprisoned for actions related to the attempt to overturn the 2020 US presidential election. Mr. Navarro spoke to reporters as he arrived.
Every person who has taken me on this road to that prison is a friggin' Democrat and a Trump hater. I will walk proudly in there and do my time. I will gather strength from this. Donald John Trump is the nominee for the Republican presidential campaign.
The World Meteorological Organization says global heat records were smashed in 2023, making it by far the hottest year ever recorded. Launching its annual State of the Climate report, the UN agency said temperatures were now getting dangerously close to the 1.5 degree limit agreed at the landmark climate summit in Paris. BBC News. Police in Haiti have killed at least three people as they repelled an attack on the country's central bank in the capital, Port-au-Prince. A bank security guard was also shot and injured in the violence on Monday. The bank thanked the police and its security team for their professionalism. The White House has said a meeting between US and Israeli officials on the situation in Rafah in Gaza will probably take place early next week. The US has joined many other countries in urging the Israeli government not to mount a major operation in Rafah. Ukraine's Prime Minister, Denis Shmyhal, has said he hopes that from April, Ukraine will start getting enough artillery shells to defend frontline positions. He cited a Czech initiative to procure 800,000 shells. Kiev's allies have been meeting in Germany to try to boost military supplies to Ukraine. The US Defense Secretary, Lloyd Austin, said Russia's war put the Allies' own security at risk and promised Washington would not let Ukraine fail. The British anarchist punk band Chumbawamba have demanded that the right-wing New Zealand politician and the country's Deputy Prime Minister, Winston Peters, stops using their biggest hit at his rallies. Mr. Peters has been using the song with its refrain, "I get knocked down, but I get up again," as a prelude to his speeches. Dunstan Bruce is a former lead singer for Chumbawamba.
His anti-immigration rhetoric I find egregious. We want to publicise the idea that we completely disagree with his ideologies and his viewpoint, and we don't agree with him using the song.
The World Health Organization has warned it's critical to vaccinate children who missed their measles shots during the COVID pandemic as global cases surge. The organisation's director of immunisation, Kate O'Brien, said more than 50 countries experienced large-scale outbreaks in 2023, twice as many as the year before. BBC News.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Hi, my name is Vicky Kenyon. I'm your host for this week's Access Hour on WORT Madison, and I am a connector. I have always loved connecting people with one another and connecting people to resources. As I dove into my second career as a realtor, I found that much of the queer and trans community on a national level is not connecting to homeownership in ways that the rest of our country does. I want to change that. My aim is to make a significant positive impact on queer and trans homeownership here in Dane County. So, after a lot of networking and a lot of planning, I gathered a team of four other professionals and launched a free educational series that provides resources and answers to questions around home ownership in an inclusive, welcoming, and safe space. And now, we bring our knowledge to you here. On this week's Access Hour, my team and I will be here talking Homeownership 101 and answering your questions live.
Six above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before.
Good afternoon and welcome to A Public Affair. I am your host for the hour, Jade Iseri Ramos. On today's show, we are doing a special two-parter. Later in the program, I will have Sue Jenick, the program director of the League of Women's Voters of Wisconsin, joining me in studio. But first, I'm bringing you a pre-recorded conversation with Sarah Quinn. Sarah Quinn is the academic and career planning coordinator at West High School, and she joins me to talk about a very exciting event happening at her school next month. Enjoy the program. Sarah, thanks for joining me on A Public Affair today.
Thanks for having me.
So you are here to talk to us about a upcoming symposium that is happening. Can you tell me about the symposium and what it's going to look like?
Yeah, I'm super excited about this. It's a new project, a pilot that we're doing at West High School. It's an afternoon of learning in community with our entire West community and local organizers, scholars, activists, and teachers. We have 50 workshops for students and staff to choose from and over 75 presenters coming to share their experiences and the work that they do around equity in Madison. It is on April 4th in the afternoon. So we're actually going to have a student organization fair during lunch, which is going to be really exciting. Kids are going to have fundraisers and have a poster session to showcase their work, and our guests will be able to see that when they enter our building. And then we'll have two different sessions of presentations.
It's amazing. What was the process reaching out to community members to get them to join this, this project?
It was actually quite fun, and I've been working on it with some of my colleagues since the beginning of the year, school year. And really just reaching out to people that we know in the community, reaching out to organizations, calling people, emailing people. And then what was really fun was a lot of people that were interested then connected me with other people that they thought would be amazing, and they are. And so I've had some really great conversations with people that I would not have known about necessarily before. So
it's the way to do it, to snowball your connections,
for
right?
For sure, yeah.
So what are going to be the activities that students and staff people are able to participate in?
Well, there's a really wide range. We have art and social justice workshops. We have disability rights and inclusion workshops, equity and education, equity and the law, gender and or sexuality, health and or mental health equity, housing and homelessness, language and communication. So a lot of workshops that include writing exercises, racism, racial justice, restorative justice, identity spotlights, which are going to be really cool, where we're learning from the personal stories and experiences of our speakers. And then we have five workshops that are going to be in Spanish.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we have 50 newcomers in our school right now and that speak very little English. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that every single student feels connected, represented, and that everything is accessible to people.
Yeah, let's stay there then for a second. So I can see this being like a day that is important for students and staff people to get sort of this like enrichment, if you will. But it also sounds like you're making connections, right? It sounds like for especially students maybe who need to get plugged in with you know, the Spanish-speaking community here, mm-hmm. that's a way to do it.
It is. Yeah. So, I mean, one of our big goals is really to build community and have students be able to take these things that they learn about in school or ideas and issues that they care about and see how they are actually worked on every day by people in the community, and to bridge that gap between what they're learning or talking about and yeah. see that it's more than just talk. And we want everyone to really feel like they're represented, whether it's through their race or ethnicity or language or ability or sexuality, whatever their identities that are important to them are, we want to uplift and value those and make sure they're represented.
Yeah. Do you have folks who are coming who are already very like plugged in to the like school community, the West community, or is it a mix?
It's a mix, but yeah. So for example, we have some of our West staff and former staff members that are recently retired that are coming back. Those are people that are obviously really plugged into the school community. We have organizations like GSAFE that are plugged into the school community. We have UW and Edgewood professors coming in. And we have Representative Sheila Stubbs is going to be here, and she's been at West a couple times in the last year. And so I feel like she's really plugged in. And then we have 7 or more alumni who know our West community that are going to be presenting.
So what does the day look like? I know there's going to be a lot of things happening, but is it, you know, everyone goes to the workshops that they want to go to? How many people can be at each workshop? Yeah. What does that sort of look
Those
like?
Those are good questions. So we're actually running our typical bell schedule in the morning. Okay. I mean, it's not typical because they're shortened classes, but we're going to run all of the students' classes in the morning. And then there's this organization fair that will happen at lunch, which is going to be really exciting to showcase the work that students are doing. And then there will be 2 different sessions that happen after lunch that every student and staff person will be assigned to 2 different sessions. So it can't be like a professional conference where people just roam around and, right. you know, choose where they're going to go, because we're responsible for students. And so they will have a schedule. They will each know where they're going session 1 and session 2. And the space depends on what's happening. So there will be like a performance that's happening in the auditorium. That obviously is hundreds of students that could be in that space. Most of our workshops will be in classroom spaces, so about 30 students or less.
Are students like saying what they're interested in? Are they getting pre-assigned? How's that
yeah.
happening?
Yeah, so they are going to have time set aside during school. There'll be one day where we have an extended 3rd hour, and they will fill out a form, and they're going to rank sort of their top 4 choices, knowing that they're going to have 2 that they're scheduled in, but they will tell us what their top 4 choices are, and then also tell us which areas they're interested in, so that we can at the very least put them in workshops that are around topics that they care about.
That's awesome. I can imagine that you're getting some hype from students. Like, one, I think when you're a high school student and there's something different that's happening, it's really exciting. But then also to have something that is totally novel, I bet, is exciting for students.
Yeah, I mean, this was born out of students wanting choice and out of students telling us they're sick of just talking about inequity. And they want to know what to do, how to do it, who's doing it. And so this is, I'm hoping, going to bridge that gap for students and empower them and build some skills around organizing and or even just knowledge around things that they care about. All of the topics that I read to you before are building off of our student leadership work and our students that really care about making positive change at our school.
That's really cool. I wonder if you are getting like any like pushback, or maybe like as you were considering doing this and pulling this all together, if there was any like, this sounds like a lot of work for, you know, one day, or like what can it change? Did you have any pushback?
I didn't really have a lot of pushback from our school community. Our administrators and staff are really supportive of this idea. We have done anti-racism work at West in a variety of ways. And I think something that's really important as educators is that we're always reflecting and adjusting. Mm. So if something isn't working, we try something new. And one thing that teachers wanted was teachers wanted education around these topics too. And they were asking for us to bring in experts and bring in people in the community that are working on these things. And they want to build connections and bring more experiential learning into the classroom. And so I think so far, no pushback from staff or administration or students. And our community, I think, is really aware of our equity vision and the work that we're doing around uplifting identities of all students and making sure that everyone feels valued and that students feel safe to express themselves and a variety of opinions and ways of being. So.
Yeah. You laid out like a swath of topics and activities. Is there any, like, can we highlight a few that you're excited about? A couple groups that are coming in, or a couple people who are coming in, what they are planning to teach about?
Sure. Gosh, this is so hard because there are 50 amazing workshops and I'm truly inspired by all of them. So I will say Wisconsin Books to Prisoners is very near and dear to my heart, and they will be there talking about their work and how students can become involved. We have a Crump dance workshop, which I think is going to be really amazing.
Crump.
Yeah. We have solar punk visual art workshop, which I did not, in full transparency, know what solar punk art was. Mm-hmm. And I am totally into it, and looking at it seems really cool. Encore Theater is a local theater that employs actors with disabilities. And so I'm really excited about that. And they're going to be doing improv in a very fully inclusive, safe way. We have a lot of restorative justice offerings. We have people that are telling their stories of resilience and redemption, people who have lived through homelessness, who have been incarcerated, lots of people that have really cool stories. So
if you're just tuning in, that is Sarah Quinn, who is talking about an equity summit that is happening at West High School on April 4th. I am your host, Jada Siri Ramos, and the show is pre-recorded. Sarah, you mentioned something at the very top, which is that students were asking to do more than have conversations, asking to get plugged in and see folks in the community who are doing work around issues that they find important. Do you have, like, is there something set up in this day that can help students connect with the organizations or the people who are coming so that they can, I don't know, continue this work outside of their school hours?
Yeah, I think there's a few ways that will happen. So naturally, whichever workshop students are attending, they will be able to, you know, share contact information and connect with those leaders who are facilitating the workshops. We also have a speaker directory, so students will have access to at least the names of everyone in the workshops that they did. And then after school, we are going to have a networking space where I'm hoping that our presenters come back together and we can build off that energy, and that students who want to connect more can also come to that space and connect with the amazing individuals that shared their time with us during that afternoon.
Yeah, that sounds cool. One of the things I think is interesting about Madison is that we are really good at having the conversation, but sometimes action comes later or doesn't come at all. We just have another conversation about the thing that we've been talking about. How, I guess, is a space encouraging the conversation to go deeper than just a conversation?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I hope that will be happening in the workshops. So I'm doing orientation sessions with our presenters and have been in communication with some of them for months, just to assist in how to create a workshop that's successful for teenagers. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people might be familiar with speaking with adults, or they get invited to a conference and, you know, it's mostly just talking. So we're really working hard to make sure that these are interactive workshops and that they give students opportunities to take that work further, whether it's through discussion or an activity or learning specific skills. Depending on the topic and what's appropriate, that is sort of built into the expectation of what happens during the day. And then my student leaders are going to be holding listening sessions following the symposium on days, you know, in April and May that come later. And that's going to be a way for our students who are really motivated and inspired and have been, you know, there's been a spark, and they can figure out how to push this work further and how to go deeper at West.
Yeah. You said student leaders. Who's the team behind you? Like, you know, you're here and you're talking to me about this event, but I can imagine that you are not alone in pulling this off.
No, I'm not alone in pulling it off. So I have colleagues that have shared contacts with me and done outreach to help us get some additional presenters. And then really the whole staff is part of the team. Staff will be in every workshop. They will be learning in community with students, but they'll also be there in case anything goes wrong and to support our presenters. They have a big part in promoting the event with students. That's really important because their teachers are with them every day. And I have other colleagues that are working with me to make this happen. And then, of course, also like our security staff that will be helping students find where they're going if they, you know, forgot which workshop they're in. You know, this is a whole school effort.
Yeah. What kind of support do you think that you need from like the community sort of at large, like maybe not the whole Madison community, but like, you know, parents or community members around West to, I don't know, sort of make this fruitful?
Yeah, I am a parent, and I'm a West parent. I have had two kids graduate from West High School. And I think when parents are plugged into what's going on at school and can talk to their kids about what they're excited about and what they're learning and what they're doing, I think that's really important. And so I'm hoping that parents, you know, with all our communications that we're doing, will be talking to their kids about what they're planning on, you know, registering for in terms of their areas of interest. And I think a lot of these are also connected to possible careers that students can have. I mean, there truly is a very wide range. So we have wellness workshops, we have community organizing workshops, we have workshops about cancer research and health disparities. I mean, there's a really wide range.
Yeah, what do you, one of the things I think I can imagine being an obstacle is having students who are just like, well, my friend has signed up, wants to do these four, yeah, and so I'm going to put these four down on my sheet as well. How are you like trying to, or maybe the teachers, are you all having conversations about like pick something that you're actually interested in, or mm-hmm. how are you making it more of an enriching day versus I get a goof from my friend's day?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this is like a concern.
Yeah,
right? These are so. In the planning of this, I have put my think like a teenager hat on in many ways. And so I'm trying to, if the kids do this, then this happens. If they, you know, I'm doing a lot of if then sort of scenarios in my head and trying to plan for that. Teachers are going to be having conversations with kids about, I mean, students have never been offered this much choice. It's almost, one of my concerns is that the amount of choice is so overwhelming in some ways that students might not read, you know, all the options. So I have created quick guides where it's a one sentence description where things are organized by category. I've created Instagram posts that will be, you know, highlighting one topic at a time. An email that goes out every day that highlights a different topic that has the workshops in chunks. So we're trying to chunk the information and really communicate to kids that this is time for you to figure out what you're interested in. It's not your teacher signing up your whole class to go see a speaker. Mm-hmm. That would be a lot easier for me to organize if I just had teachers sign up to bring a class to a certain workshop. But I know that when that happens, some kids in the class are going to be really interested in the topic and others are going to be really checked out. So this is an experiment in offering students a lot of choice. And so we hope that they take advantage of that and don't just check the boxes that their friends do. And if they do, you know, they may or may not be assigned with their friends because we have 2,200 students to assign. And so luckily, my spouse is a computer software engineer, and he will be figuring out the algorithm to make this matching happen. So
that's amazing. You mentioned student leaders who are going to be holding conversations after. Are there students involved in the workshops also? Like,
there are some students. So we have one of our workshops is about the creation of the Fitchburg Teen Center, which has received funding. And the leaders of that workshop are working really hard to include teen voice throughout. And one of the workshop presenters is actually one of our West students. She's the president of Familia Latina, and she's an amazing, amazing leader in our school. So she'll be part of that. And then there are other workshops that will feature some of our students or even students from other schools. So I know there's a workshop that's actually going to be held outside about the benefits of nature on mental health. Mm. And there will be a couple students coming from another school, not from West, that will be part of facilitating that.
That's cool. I like the idea of having a peer voice in the workshop. If you're just tuning in, I am Jada Siri Ramos, filling in for Ali Muldrow. My guest today is Sarah Quinn, and she's talking about an upcoming symposium happening at West High School on April 4th. Show's pre-recorded, which means we won't take calls during the hour, but you can always send me an email at talk@wartfm.org. How have conversations gone when you are reaching out to different organizations saying that you're interested or you would like to invite them to be a part of the symposium?
Yeah, people have been really receptive and really excited and warm and interested in what they can do that would be relevant to students. That's been a question that's asked a lot, is what do students want? What are they caring about? What is going to be relevant? So I think our community and the people that have stepped up and are volunteering their time to do this for us, they're asking the right questions, and they care about student growth and development and connection to our community. So
yeah, that's really cool. Are you do you call them? Do you email them? What is sort of the behind the scenes of it?
So usually I email outreach first, and then I offer a Zoom meeting or a phone call. And many people have taken me up on that. Some people feel really confident and good, and they're like, yes, and I know what I'm going to do. And then they sign up right away. And then we will all gather together during orientation sessions. I'm holding a whole bunch of them and asking that people attend one just so they know the logistics of the day and that everybody feels prepared and I can answer questions and do my plug again for interaction within the workshop so that it's exciting and good for kids.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can tell that you really care about this and you're really excited for this. What in your background or what in your professional experience has brought you to a place where this is something that you are willing to put this much effort in, right? It's a brand new thing. No one was expecting you to do this.
No, but so I'm really privileged to have a position that offers a lot of flexibility. So I spent many years in the classroom, and classroom teaching is so critical and important and difficult and constant. You're constantly making decisions and writing new curriculum, and you're constantly on stage. My role now as the academic and career planning coordinator for the last several years gives me a little bit more time to think and plan and execute events that are a little bit larger scale for the whole school. So that job includes working on experiential learning, helping students with high school and post-high school planning, and making sure that they're college community and career ready, mm-hmm. which is something MMSD, the College Career and Community Ready, is an important part of the work that we do. And so my role allows me to really work on things that get students to that graduate vision that we have, which includes community connections, cultural competency, creativity, wellness, self-knowledge. And so this is a project that I think could be a really beautiful way for students to connect. And administration has, you know, given me the space, and my role gives me the space to elevate student voice, listen to students and listen to staff about ways that we can creatively and innovatively try new things in terms of our equity work and our equity vision.
Yeah, I think that's huge, right? What I'm hearing you say is that you know, there's these goals that you're trying to get students towards, but a lot of times I think who students are interacting with are, you know, their parents, their family, and then their teachers. And, you know, teachers have a pretty clear path, most of them, right? As mm-hmm. they go to school and then they become teachers. And so I think by giving students an opportunity to see adults who are working and have had many paths to the space that they're in.
Yeah.
I think you're showing students a lot of different ways to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, that is really that's a big part of my work. We do career panels throughout the year, about one a month. And I think it's really important to connect students to what work looks like when you're an adult, but also like how jagged and different people's pathways are to where they are today. And I think often kids think there's one right way or there's one path to getting to where they need to be. And that's just not real. It's not realistic. It's not the way most people's career pathways look. Mm-hmm. It's not a straight line. And there's all kinds of influences that really matter in people's lives. And so I just am really excited to sort of bridge the gap between these issues that kids are telling us they care about and then the people that are doing the work every day.
Yeah, absolutely. So I also want to like sort of center your own identity into this. Also, you know, our listeners can't see you, but you're a white woman who lives in Madison on the West Side, I assume. Mm-hmm. How important is it for you to sort of amplify the voices of other folks in the community, BIPOC folks in the community who can come and have these conversations that can get to a level that, you know, you or maybe some of your colleagues can't get to?
Absolutely. I mean, our kids tell us every day, our BIPOC students tell us all the time how important it is to be with people who share their identities and to learn from people who look like them. It's representation really matters. And our speakers are representative of our population in every way. And so I think those connections that kids can make on this day with other leaders in the community and people that are making a difference and doing really hard work, people that look like them, it makes a huge difference. So I can just give a quick little example. Yeah. At one of our career panels, it was a career panel on legal careers, and we had these two amazing lawyers that work on against the death penalty and representing people on death row. And one of our speakers was from Colombia. And there was a Colombian student in the audience, and she was so moved, and it made such a difference for her to see a woman coming from the same country as her, speaking the same language. She had tears in her eyes. She came to meet that woman after the panel, took a picture with her. I mean, these things matter to people. And so I'm good at planning things and I'm organized, and but it is not, you know, and it is my job to work with white students and talk to white students about equity issues and talk to all students, but it is not, this work is everyone's job, right. But representation is really important. And when kids can learn from a variety of people that look like them or don't look like them, I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, I mean, representation is really important. I think especially, just the general idea of if you can see it, you can believe it,
mm-hmm.
right? Seeing that someone that has a somewhat similar background or shares an identity with you can help you believe that you can do what they can do. And then I also think what you're saying, which I would like to also highlight, is you can break down some of that inequity by showing students who don't share that background that, you know, a person from Colombia can be a civil rights lawyer.
Yeah.
And that's an important thing for students who, you know, for all students to, mm-hmm. to know that can be true.
Right, right. So white students need to see leaders of color.
Yeah.
And need to see the diversity in our community. It's important for all students.
Maybe you don't have an answer for this right now. I know you were saying that you're working on how you're going to organize students, but is there a way that you're going to make sure that, like, you know, for this example, that Colombian student would have a priority to be in that class?
That's a really good question. And that, so I can tell you that for our Spanish speaking students who are newcomers, those students, will be hand scheduled into our Spanish workshops. Mm-hmm. So they will have priority for those workshops. For the general population, it's going to be really difficult for me with 2,200 kids to like know who's who,
yeah.
Or do that. But I'm hoping that things work out well. And I think when people do like first choice, second choice, third choice, fourth choice, we're hoping kids can at least get, you know, two that are in there.
Yeah.
In their top four.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we talked a little bit before about any pushback, and you said you've mostly had positive reception. But you're also talking about things that are hard to talk about, and that, you know, we've seen, I think we've seen maybe more in the media than maybe we're actually experiencing. I mean, I'm not in the school system, so I don't mm-hmm. know how much you're actually experiencing parents in particular being upset about school not just teaching, you know, math, science, writing, and reading. But are you at all nervous that having a whole half of a day towards inequity, right, is going to make some people mad, have some people push back on, you know, why are you teaching my kid about LGBTQ stuff, or why are you teaching mm-hmm. my kid about, you know, critical race theory?
Mm-hmm.
Are you nervous about that?
I'm not really nervous about it. So I feel like MMSD has a pretty clear stance,
mm-hmm.
and West has a well-publicized equity vision that grounds the work that we do with our students and our staff. All of our parents have seen this multiple times, and it has not been contested. You know, we're committed to uplifting and valuing the diverse identities of all students and families, and we're committed to exploring and connecting communities beyond West. Those are parts of our vision. There's also 50 choices. So students will indicate what they're interested in.
Right.
So I don't imagine that kids are going to be randomly put in workshops that they feel super uncomfortable in. With that said, I will say that there is value in discomfort,
yeah.
and that, you know, we need, that's where we grow and pushing ourselves a little bit helps us grow and think about these things. I will also say that standards are being addressed in these workshops. So there are English standards being addressed in many of them. We have many writing-focused workshops. There are science standards. We have, you know, cancer workshops. We have workshops about health equity. Certainly social studies is represented. Art is represented. So These workshops are learning experiences for students. And we also want our students to all feel like this is an opportunity to go deeper and get into various perspectives and nuance. So all of these workshops build on our student anti-racism work that our students create. Mm. And every other week, students have created a video that gets played for the whole school around a variety of topics and also highlighting people's identities. And that is only 5 minutes.
Right.
So that can't go deep. But these workshops give students an opportunity to hear various perspectives, to share their various perspectives. And I think parents are in support of critical thinking and, you know, discussing things in a respectful way. And the goal is not to for everyone to agree about everything. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really move things forward either. So
what are you hoping comes out of this experience, the symposium?
Yeah, I mean, so our tagline is community awareness voice. So I'm really hoping that we will build community and bridge the community to the school. I think a lot of people really don't know what goes on in our schools. And so bringing the community in, I think, is a really cool way to bridge that gap, because I know that our presenters will learn from our students and mm-hmm. our staff. And I know so that learning will go both ways. And I think building community around a shared experience where we're dedicating time in the day to go deeper into equity issues and maybe shift mindsets and slow down and do something that you're really interested in. I think that that's going to be a really cool shared experience. I hope it leads to increased student empowerment and action. Mm-hmm. So I hope that that students are able to think about how this affects their daily sphere of influence or their desire to organize or see cultural shifts at West, whatever it is that kids are excited by. I hope that this is a spark for that. And then really just strengthening partnerships with the community, I think, is a goal, because that it's really sort of COVID set us back in our community connections. And I think we're like really ready to bring people back in. So
Sarah, we are running out of time. We're going to get kicked out of the studio pretty soon. How can folks learn more, or if they're interested in being involved next year, how can they learn about the symposium? How can they contact you?
Yeah, so if you go to the West website and click on the Student Resource Hub, from the Student Resource Hub, you'll see a page for the Equity Symposium, and that is a great place to learn more about what's happening, and you can actually see all of the amazing workshops and descriptions and speaker directory. If people are interested in getting involved next year, that would be amazing, and they can reach out to me. My email is sequinn, Q-U-I-N-N.
Sequin.
Sequin with two N's, at madison.k12.wi.us.
Thank you. Sarah, it's been really nice talking to you about the symposium, and I hope it goes really well.
Thank you so much.
And this is Jade Iseri Ramos coming back to you live in the studio. In just 2 weeks from today is the spring election. This year, voters in Wisconsin will determine their party candidate for president, will vote for a variety of local elected officials, and will also decide on two proposed constitutional amendments. Joining me to talk about those amendments is Sue Jenick. Sue is a program director of Dane County League of Women's Voters and chair of the Wisconsin League of Women's Voters Legislative Committee. Sue, I tripped over my intro a little bit, but how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks so much for giving us the opportunity to talk about these important amendments.
Yeah. Before we get to the actual text of the two constitutional amendments that are on the ballot, can you help me understand the process in Wisconsin? If a majority of the voters vote yes, would these amendments immediately amend the Constitution?
Yes, that is exactly what happens. In the state of Wisconsin, there's no opportunity for citizens to put forward a constitutional amendment or a referendum question. Only the legislature can do that. The legislature then has to pass the amendment in two consecutive legislative sessions, and then the legislature decides what will go to the electors, the people who vote, and when it will be on the ballot. They decide the ballot language, and they also decide when it will be on the ballot.
Okay, so these two amendments have had a long life before they even see our ballot. Is that
yes,
true?
They have. I mean, the topics of these amendments were first introduced by the legislature in the 2021 session. They were passed, and they were vetoed by the governor. And then the legislature decided to present these as constitutional amendments.
Okay. I think I understand how this works and how we got here. So let's talk about the First Amendment. Do you want to read what the amendment text is? I could also read it.
Well, this isn't actually the text.
Okay.
Just to be clear.
Sorry, the text on the ballot.
This is what you will see as the ballot language.
Okay.
It does not have to be the same as the actual text of the amendment. And it's different. In this case, it's different, I think, in somewhat minor ways.
Okay.
It's not totally misleading, as some of them have been. But this is what people will see on their ballot. And it has to do with using private funds in election administration. Basically, it would just ban any use of private funds or donations of anything in that could be used in election administration.
So in practice, what does that look like? What are the funds that, like, what could funds be that would be banned?
Well, what this came from was in the 2020 election, right at the beginning of the pandemic in April 2020, mm-hmm. A lot of municipalities weren't ready to deal with COVID that we were facing. And that was especially true in Milwaukee, where they ended up closing all their polling places except five. Mm. And, you know, they couldn't get people to volunteer to be poll workers. They didn't have protective equipment. I mean, there were all kinds of issues. And I remember because I grew up in Milwaukee, mm-hmm. and my family told me about the long lines that they had to wait in to vote in the April primary in 2020. In response to that, and that happened in other places around the country, in response to that, Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Chan, donated money to a foundation to be used for election administration. And in Wisconsin, over 200 municipalities applied for and received funds from that foundation. So, you know, that's what motivated this. The five biggest cities in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. which have the most population, received more of the funds than the smaller places did. But still, there were, you know, over 200 municipalities that got that money. And any municipality that applied for it received it.
Okay. So this was literal dollars that municipalities were able to receive in order to help with their election, with the election in 2020.
Yes. And once that money is given to a governmental agency, it's governmental property.
Right.
And the government then decides how that money is going to be spent. So there has been some allegations that, you know, it was partisan. I think the facts don't bear that out.
So this amendment, which says the use of private, sorry, it's not the amendment, the ballot text, which is different from the amendment slightly, says the use of private funds in election administration is the heading of that. Shall Section 7, parentheses 1 of the Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that private donations and grants may not be applied for, accepted, expended, or used in connection with the conduct of any primary, election, or referendum. So it's saying that only public funds can be used in elections. Is that what it's saying?
Yes.
And so that would be like tax dollars.
Correct. Correct. And that could come from the state, the federal government, or a municipality itself. But ultimately, in the end, it's the responsibility of the municipality to run the election. And if there is not sufficient money available to them from the state or the federal government, they have to come up with the funds mm-hmm. one way or another, usually by raising taxes.
Yeah, or they do something like you had mentioned in Milwaukee during the April primary where you only have 5 polling places open.
Right. I mean, that's the other option available to them, to do a low-cost election, which means fewer polling places and, you know, fewer poll workers, long lines, you know, difficulties with the election.
So the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, as well as of Dane County, have made a statement on what you all think that voters should vote on this. And what is that?
We are advocating that people vote no on this proposal and also the question 2, which I'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah. Is there any other reasons behind why no, besides what we just sort of fleshed out?
Well, I think the language of the on the ballot and also in the amendment prohibits the use of private donations and grants. Mm. So what is a private donation? Many municipalities run their elections in a room that's donated by a non-governmental organization.
I vote at a church. Yeah.
Right. It might be a church. Mm-hmm. The Overture Center apparently makes some space available. And it looks to me like that would be prohibited under this absolute prohibition on the use of private donations or grants. So I think, you know, that is very problematic for the way things happen now. The other thing is the Constitution sets forth our basic rights and responsibilities. It should not include details of how our elections should be run. If people think there should be guardrails and some regulation of the use of private funds in election administration, then that's a proposal that should be made.
Yeah.
You know, the absolute ban on the use of these funds or the acceptance of the funds from a private organization, I think is just going too far.
All right. We've got just about 6 minutes left and we've got a whole other amendment that we got to talk about. So what is the second amendment that is being
The second amendment has to do with election officials. That's the title. And it says, shall Section 7(2) of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that only election officials designated by law may perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums. Again, we are advocating that people vote no on this proposal. And for a couple of reasons. One is it's not needed. There is, in fact, a statute that says only election officials can have roles in, you know, regard to running an election. And poll workers are trained and poll workers are sworn in as election officials. So this would not affect are, you know, the use of election officials. So what is the motivation behind this? I don't know. Mm. To be honest with you, I've searched, I've researched, I've looked for quotes of people explaining why this is needed, and I haven't found anything. I'm not really sure where it's coming from, but it's not needed. And again, the broad language may perform tasks in the conduct of an election. What kind of tasks? I mean, many tasks are needed
in
the conduct of an election. What about the people who manufacture the voting machines and somebody has a problem and they need help?
Right.
You know, they're not an election officials. Now what do we do?
Right. The IT guy can't touch the machine.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I wonder, you know, we talked about these two amendments and the text that is on the ballot. Do you have any thoughts about maybe there's almost like a common sense thing that's triggered with both of these that are like, oh yeah, like I don't want big money in on my election, so maybe I should vote yes to the first one. Or I do think people should be trained to help with elections. I'm going to vote yes for this. Is there something about the text in particular that is, I don't want to say tricky, but a little bit tricky about these?
Well, they do sound pretty innocuous. Mm-hmm. When you just read the language, you think, okay, you know, that kind of makes sense. What's the big deal? And I've presented these issues to different groups of people, and that's kind of their first reaction, you know, looks okay to me. But when I go through what it actually means and what the results could be, people realize, you know, it's not innocuous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that, you know, we should just say, oh, yeah, sure. Again, I think we have to consider what belongs in our Constitution. And, you know, if the legislature wants to make changes, then they need to work with the governor, whoever that may be, and, you know, figure out a way to make changes that make sense.
Yeah. Do you think that these two amendments are like playing on this sort of belief that maybe our elections aren't as secure, or they're not as reliable? You know, the big lie, right, that we saw in 2020. Is that part of it? You know, putting it on the ballot that like our elections need reformed?
Yes, I think that is part of the motivation. And I think, you know, some people may be concerned about that. The private funds that were used in the 2020 election were challenged in state courts, including Wisconsin, and nowhere was it found to be a violation or found to have, you know, unlawfully interfered with the fairness of the election. In fact, there's been no proof at all that there was anything wrong with the election in 2020. So other than people, you know, spouting opinions about it, there hasn't been any proof that that has happened. And to then, you know, make a proposal to change our Constitution based on this idea that doesn't have anything behind it, we think it's just wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, that has been Sue Jenick. Sue is the program director of the Dane County League of Women's Voters and the chair of the Wisconsin League of Women's Voters Legislative Committee. Sue, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
My first guest of the hour was Sarah Quinn, who is the academic and career planning coordinator at West High School. I want to thank John Lang, who engineered today's show. I want to thank Shali Pittman for doing all the things with the news here at WORT, and Steve, our receptionist. Up next is Letters and Politics. I've been your host, Jade Siri Ramos, and you're listening to community-sponsored radio, WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Frequency radio modulation, the big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, no precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions.
This is Pacifica Radio's Letters and Politics. On today's show,
I was trying to see if there was evidence of one kind of mating strategy or another in our past. And one of the unfortunate stories that we tell about cis men and boys is that somehow they are innately rapists or sexual coercion people, that somehow it's just natural and society then works against some innate instinct. Now, I don't actually believe that to be true for many reasons, right? Because we're not showing evidence of that being a dominant mating strategy in our bodies, in our evolutionary path. So if a lot of sexual coercion is going down, we don't have those cues in our bodies.
A conversation on evolution and gender. Our guest is Kat Bohannon, author of the book Eve, How the Female Body Drove 200 Million Years of Human Evolution. That's next on Letters and Politics. But first, the news.
Hello, I'm Moira Alderson with the BBC News. Brazilian police have formally accused the COVID skeptic former president Jair Bolsonaro of falsifying his vaccination records, opening the door to possible criminal charges in the Supreme Court. Mr. Bolsonaro's health records say he received a jab in São Paulo in July 2021, but an investigation later found he wasn't in the city at the time. Here's Ione Wells.
This indictment suggests that police have now found enough evidence to charge him, and so he may well face criminal proceedings, and depending whether or not he is found guilty, that could lead to prosecution for these crimes. He is facing kind of a number of other investigations at the moment. Another he is facing is into whether or not he incited an alleged coup when he lost the last presidential election. So these claims against the former president are now stacking up, and I think this is just one of the latest to suggest that he faces trouble ahead.
The UN's human rights chief has condemned a sweeping new security law in Hong Kong, saying it could lead to the criminalization of rights and freedoms protected under international law. The UN human rights chief, Volker Türk, says the security bill's content was deeply troubling, given its potential misuse and arbitrary application. Jeremy Lawrence is his spokesman.
The High Commissioner says the ambiguity is deeply troubling, given its potential misuse and arbitrary application.